I think it's 8:30, and it's time to get underway. I couldn't help but wonder if Jack was going to show up. And if you, I've never seen Jack this relaxed in my life. He's got a big smile on his face, no tie, he's a happy man. I don't know what changed in the last 24 hours. Good morning, we're going to get underway. We have two very important speakers today. Of course, they're all important, but I'm particularly looking forward not only the economy, but the industrial mat business and industrial timbers that Judd's going to talk about. If I have your attention a moment, if we can have all the cell phones in the room turned off. All right, joining us this morning is a hardwood market publisher and analyst, Judd Johnson. He is, thank you, he's a trusted source of information in our industry, and he's no stranger to us at the HMA. So we've asked Judd to update us on the industrial lumber products market. Please welcome Judd Johnson.
Well, good morning. Last year, I was able to speak to this group and was given 5 minutes to talk to you about market trends. Of course, 5 minutes wasn't very long, so it was pretty much condensed down to the U.S. housing market and exports. To Jack's surprise, I actually stayed on time, so I was rewarded with a 30-minute time slot to speak to you. So you get the benefit from hearing me talk for 30 minutes. But not just talk for 30 minutes, I've got more pictures too. I was a little surprised when I was asked to speak about industrial markets with the upturn in grade lumber markets that we've seen and the energy there and the price movement there. I thought, well, surely that's what everybody wants to see. But when I thought about it, it made perfect sense because it's been in the industrial markets that's carried this industry for our last economic and business downturn. And we have to have our industrial markets working in tandem with our grade lumber markets if our industry is really going to function like it should. Which brings me to this. Turn your phone off. And then that brings me to this. This is an old adage that I think most everybody in this room has probably heard at least one version before or not. You take care of the low-grade lumber because the high-grade lumber is going to take care of itself. And that certainly was true early in my career and probably early in your career, but that hasn't been the case for the last several years. As a matter of fact, up until recently, it's been inverted, that you really had to take care of the high-grade lumber because the low-grade lumber was doing just fine. And it looks something like this. In 1999, this was our go-to year. Anytime we go back to a reference for peak performance is 1999. Now, I don't know if 99 was good for profitability or if anybody made any money at all, but that was peak performance for production and consumption by our major market sectors. It was also a time before globalization hit a critical mass and affected all of our secondary manufacturing markets. The market makeup at this time, as you can see, 60% grade lumber, 40% industrial markets. Now we fast forward to 2013, and it didn't happen overnight, but things are quite different. The market's inverted, 40% grade lumber, 60% industrial markets. Also, what happened in this time period from 99 to 2013, as you all have lived through, is a fundamental change in the market size. And that looks like this. It's clear to see where the change occurred, and it's equally clear to see where the change did not occur. And when you look at this, we ask ourselves, or I ask myself, how did consumption volumes from industrial timbers stay so consistent during this time? Did these markets endured a very broad economic downturn? How did that happen? Was their business static? And if it wasn't static, what changed? And if it did change, how does that affect our business moving forward? So all these questions deserve some consideration, and I want to see if we can discover some answers. To start with, I need to get a couple things out of the way. First is to identify the industrial markets, what I call industrial markets. Pallet industry, of course, is the largest consumer of sawn hardwood lumber. Secondly, we have the railway tie industry. And third, and most recently added to our major market sector, is the board road and crane mat business. Together, that's 60% consumption of from our major market sectors. The second thing I want to do is to provide a quick overview of the discussion we're going to have. I want to look at each one of these industrial sectors over a historical backdrop. I want to point out factors that are influencing business for each one of these market sectors. And then I want to consider some challenges and some opportunities for each one of these sectors to try to develop a perspective of how business might be looking forward. And we're probably going to need a little more than 5 minutes, but maybe not 30. All markets and your business are affected by our economy. We operate inside that larger circle. But perhaps more than others, the pallet business follows very closely the GDP, and it reacts very quickly. It's a very short lag time. There's also a close connection between pallet consumption and manufacturing with the manufacturing capacity utilization in the United States. Now, you may be familiar with the general trend or the V-shape that you're going to see in the pallet consumption. It's similar to what you saw in the economy, similar to what you saw in the manufacturing capacity utilization. Hardwood consumption volumes by the Wooden Packaging Container and Container Association, which we're referring to as pallets, consumption declined heading into the Great Recession. It bottomed out, like most everything in our economy, bottomed out in 2009. But after hitting bottom in 2009, it began to move back up, again improving with the economy. And our economy, according to IMF, continues to improve. This is a broader spectrum of that, but yes, the U.S. economy is projected to improve. We're going to hear much more about that later. What's encouraging about this particular graph, we also see the global economy is improving. Canada's doing well. Our mature trading partners in Europe are doing well or improving. Even Spain and Italy are coming out of negative growth to positive growth. China's growth has slowed. We've heard a lot about that. But consumer spending, last that I saw, is still double digit, which is helpful to our businesses. The other thing, emerging markets are showing growth. India in particular, and I know this is getting off the subject of industrials, but India in particular is interesting to me. Strong percentage growth for the next 3 years. They're not going to be a consumer of lumber, according to AHEC, but they are going to be consumers of wood products, hotel industry in particular. So this is a very encouraging graph image to me. Back to pallet consumption again. You may remember pallet consumption declined over time as it experienced a fundamental shift, and that fundamental shift was recycling pallets. And the advent of recycling pallets began mid-90s, late 90s, and it continued until about 2006 or 2007. They're still recycling pallets, of course. What's happened is inventory has propagated the marketplace, so the replacement volumes have leveled off. So that part of the marketplace has matured. But there's something important about that rings in my mind is this industry has experienced, the pallet industry experienced a fundamental change that negatively affected its lumber consumption. This is an industry, obviously, that we have to have. So if it happened before, fundamental change happened before, it possibly can happen again. And there are two things that come to my mind. This industry is constantly hammered by alternative materials, plastics, or even no pallets at all. That would be Walmart's favorite to just do slip sheets. So that's vulnerable. The other thing that it's being attacked with, unjustly in my opinion, is the stigma of being a bad environmental choice. So those things are out there. Yes, our industry, our marketplace is growing for pallets. It's doing well right now, but we don't need to take anything for granted with this industry in particular. There are 161,000 Class 1 railroad miles and 50,000 miles of short line and miscellaneous track in the United States. When you add sidings, industrial, port, and government, that total climbs to 220,000 miles of track in the United States. Every 20 inches is a cross tie. Every year, railroads must replace 3% as a matter of routine maintenance of those cross ties. If you add in Canada and Mexico, North America has, according to Railway Tie Association, 1 billion cross ties or 1 billion ties in service. Now, if you take that 3% replacement factor and you multiply it by 44 5/8 board feet for a 7x9, 8.5 foot cross tie, that's 1.34 billion board feet of cross ties just for replacement. If you back that off and limit it to just the United States, that's 937 million board feet a year, again, just for replacement, before a single mile of new track is laid. But they are laying new track. RTA projects a 2.2 increase in tie purchases this year over last. They project another 4.2% increase in 2015 over 2014. The footage that amounts to is 1.14 billion, 1.19 billion feet, respectively. Two key factors driving expansion for railroads. One would be imports of manufactured goods and parts. It's the most efficient way to move product from ports inland, of course, and across country. The second thing, obviously, is increased petroleum production in Canada and the United States. You would include with petroleum products fracking sand. Even with these proposed pipelines that we're hearing about for petroleum, there are additional plans to expand railroad to partner with oil lines, oil pipelines, to move oil product to the West Coast to increase the market flexibility. The trouble that we have with this proposed increase in tie purchases is there's not enough ties in the processing system right now. This graph gives us an idea of what's available, what will be used. But we jump ahead a few months, and recent purchases, current purchases of cross ties, are going to intersect with seasonal increases of insertions as we move into the summer. Inventories, as they do every year when they move into summer, they drop very rapidly. And playing this forward another 6 months, it's very possible that cross tie receipts are not going to be improved very much, but construction season is going to be at peak for the railroad industry 6 months from now. So the concern for the railroad industry about supply is they're going to face severe shortages at a critical time in their construction season. Now let's backtrack to 2009 a little bit. Tie purchases increased sharply during the depths of the U.S. hardwood lumber industry depression. And traditionally, tie prices follow 4/4 2A red oak closely along. But it's no coincidence in 2009 that prices increased sharply for cross ties when grade lumber 2A red oak, as you see in this particular graph, plummeted. There's no mystery why that happened either. Simply, railroads needed cross ties, and they knew they needed sawmills in business to produce those cross ties. The way for them to do it was to raise their prices. So you can raise your hands if you want to. I know a few of you. In 2009, anybody in here modify your sawmill or your building so you could cut a double cross tie? You don't have to raise your hand, just that nervous twitch, Charlie. Now, all of you that did that, how many of you reverted back to sawing grade lumber again? Well, if you look at this graph, it's obvious why you would have done that. After prices for 2A red oak fell through the bottom of the end of the range, in current dollars, we've seen them soar to new record highs. The current prices, current dollar value for cross ties is a little bit above average for this 14-year period that we're covering in this graph. Here are the same items in real dollars with inflation factored in. Excluding the double dip that you see in 2A red oak, 2A red oak prices are just slightly above the average for this 14-year period. Real prices for 7x9 cross ties are slightly below the average for this 14-year period. So it seems to me if the railroad industry is facing a supply shortage problem, they might want to think back to 2009 and see if price is not a solution for them. Board road and crane mats. I know the least amount about this market sector than any other major market sector. And what I discovered during my process in preparing for this particular meeting was a lot of people in the mat timber business, board road business, don't know much about the marketplace either. I also discovered that they weren't very interested in, not many of them are very interested in talking to me about details of their business. But there were those that did. People in the production, assembly, and distribution were kind enough to share with me information about their business. And I'd like to share that with you a little bit. First, this marketplace has been around for a long time, but it took increased record high petroleum prices, oil, natural gas, and fracking technology to bring this market to a major market status. These are the markets or the end uses of board road and crane mat materials, the industries that it serves. It's oil and gas drilling sites, marine platform and decking, pipelines, electric transmission. We see it in wind farms on the ground for servicing bridges, excavation support. And these are some of the board road mat timber product names. And if you read it, it's going to sound like a Forrest Gump menu. There's crane mats, bridge mats, pipeline mats, digging mats. You can read it yourself. I'm positive that there are a lot of names that are off here that seems to be sort of colloquial with some manufacturers. Based solely on my interviews with people that participated, the mat builders and suppliers, this is the order of the markets that they service. The pipeline and petroleum extraction are clearly the largest markets for them. The supply base and distribution of board road and mat timbers is highly fragmented, it's multi-layered, and it's not always transparent, especially when you get into distribution. We have large sawmills that are vertically integrated that produce the raw materials and assemble mats. You have mat builders that purchase lumber and timber from other sawmills, and those mat builders that purchase lumber on the outside may or may not have their own sawmills. Sawmills that produce and sell lumber and mat timbers to the mat builders, directly or indirectly. And then we have brokers that purchase mat timber and lumber that sell it to the mat builders and the refurbishers. Distribution includes direct shipments from the manufacturer to the job site, delivery to warehouses and reload facilities for further distribution, and third party or more participation in transactions. We recognize these as types of customers or businesses that actually purchase board road and crane mats. Construction contractor, engineering firm, utility company, distributor, broker, competitor, mat builder. But what we don't seem to know is who the customer really is. Where does the order start? Who is the guy determining, I want this many mats on this job on this date? Who do you call, pick up the phone and call to solicit business? Who's the guy that you're building a relationship with so you can continue to do the business? So the question that we have is, who is that guy? The flow of business. If our friends from up north, you may think of this as a sunny summer day, the way this winter has gone. But what this slide illustrates is timber, board road mat timber business during the winter months. The seasonal aspect of construction slows shipments of the manufactured or assembled mats, board road, as well as the raw material. Of the manufacturers I surveyed, it's common practice to continue building during the off months. You build to keep your crews together, build your inventory to have that in place for when the weather breaks. Determining the size of the inventory that a builder wants to do is strictly a matter of cash. How much do they have available? How much can they stomach to sit on until the phone rings? And waiting for the phone to ring is exactly how the business is done in board road and crane mats. At least a lot of it is done that way. But when the call does come, it's not a matter of, you know, do you have a load or two, or what's your competitive price, or maybe I need you to ship it, you know, a month from now. There's no one kicking tires when that phone rings. Instead, they want to know how many you got, how many you can ship on this date, deliver here, and usually they want it right away. So this is how the last sales season started for board road and crane mat materials. So what about this coming season? To quote one manufacturer I surveyed, there's no defined matrix for projecting demand except to monitor oil and gas field construction and extraction. This particular manufacturer processes about 100 million board feet a year into crane mats. There's also no method to monitor total inventory combined of mats in the field, at the distribution level, and at the manufacturer. So I want to recap what we've talked about so far. No one seems to know who the customer is. We don't know who, nor is there a means to determine the scope of product demand. And we don't know what the inventory status is and how that might affect demand for new mats. So taking all that into account, I would say this is a business not for the weak at heart. So far, I told you things that we don't know about this industry. But I do want to touch on something, the one thing that we do know. And that one thing we do know is this. Somehow, some way, the United States has become one of the world's largest producers of petroleum. I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but it did. Implementing fracking technology was a big part of that, but that couldn't have happened if we didn't have a political spirit to allow this to go on. So what is the outlook for U.S. energy production and consumption? Well, according to my sources, if we can answer that question, we're going to have a really good outlook on what demand for board road and mat timbers will be. The Energy Information Administration projects moderate annual growth in energy consumption through 2040. I would say this is probably a pretty good indicator of our economy. Also, we see increased domestic production closing the gap on imported energy. And there's a decline from foreign sources to 16% in 2012. It falls all the way to 3% in 2035. 60% of the petroleum and other liquid fuels consumed in 2005 was imported. That decreased to 40% in 2012 and is expected to decrease further. I wouldn't confuse the domestic supply line of this graph with our production, because our production, our markets are going to open up for exports. They're already there. Production will have a better line than what our consumption will. And this gives you a little indication of that. We see natural gas showing a long continued increase in production. Crude oil and natural gas liquids have several more years of growth before they begin tapering off. So we just take these two sections of the petroleum industry. It looks like we've got several more years of continued growth for demand for board road mat timbers. Pipeline construction, we've all heard about it. Keystone Project just cleared a major hurdle with State Department, gave thumbs up on environmental approval. Something this image doesn't show, I mentioned earlier about cross ties. There are plans being discussed, and they may be further along than I certainly know, of building railroads from Cushing to the West Coast to deliver petroleum to chemical plants as well as export, to increase the market flexibility for the petroleum industry. Everything isn't just going to go to the Gulf. Potentially, we're going to have that much more demand for board road and mat timbers. I'm going to put in a wrap on this thing. It doesn't appear that the market makeup, the 60% industrial, 40%, is going to change this year. It doesn't look like it's going to change in the next several years. And this actually would bring me to a nice, neat conclusion talking about board road and about industrial timbers and lumber. But when I was thinking about this presentation, there was another thought that I think is relevant to you and your business, something I'd like you to consider. With all the advantages these industrial markets have for us, they saved us during the Depression. They're an important part of your business today. But they also create challenges for grade lumber markets. And I just want to leave you with this, to consider the impact of lumber supplies needed for flooring, for cabinets, for components that go into other interior fittings and furnishings. If you think of the money that's in these industrial markets, not so much pallet industry, certainly board road mat timber, cross ties, the cost of wood fiber probably is not going to stop construction of an oil pipeline. The Union Pacific is one of six Class I railroads in the United States. This company invested $4.3 billion last fiscal year in capital expenditures. There are federal mandates that require maintenance for railroads that drive demand. Also, there's expansion in that railroad market, that they're going to build new lines. That's going to happen. I don't know the amount, but I think it's a safe bet to say that our major market sectors for lumber did not invest $4.3 billion in capital improvement last year. Furthermore, the cost of wood fiber is more relevant to consumer products than it is industrial markets. And the reason for that simply is consumers have different boundaries than the oil industry and the railroads, other marketplace. So I wanted you to keep that in mind. And now I can thank you for your time and attention, and thank you very much.